Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Jeremy with 7Ts. Jeremy, thanks for coming on, first of all. Yeah, let us know where you're calling in from, and you'll tell us what you do for a living with 7Ts.
Awesome, man. Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm Jeremy. I'm one of the co-founders of 7Ts, along with my brother, Josh. We call ourselves the Brew Brothers.
Awesome.
And we've been in the tea space for 6 years now. Can't believe it. It's been quite a journey. And we make low-sugar, high-quality, premium iced tea in glass bottles and cans, those two formats. And we just added low-sugar lemonade to the list. And that's, in a nutshell, what we do. The brand really draws on point of origin, people, planet, and really honors those traditions from where the teas are born from.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that. And I guess just tell me a little bit more about your background. Like, you know, what got you into wanting to make a tea brand like this? What did you notice out there on the market with maybe other more traditional, you know, iced tea brands that you thought maybe wasn't, you know, reaching somebody or something that needed to be fixed in that market?
Amazing. Great question. So, you know, my background is herbalism and studied Western herbs, Eastern herbs, you know, all sorts of herbal traditions, as well as yoga. You know, my brother and I are yogis. We also come from a mixed background, my dad being from Iran and Jewish, and my mom has roots in Britain, in England, and but grew up in Texas. Both British and Persian are very like tea drinking cultures. So we always had tea in the house. And we also, from an early age, were raised in this kind of multicultural family. So we always had that upbringing. A little bit later on in our journey, my brother and I did a lot of traveling. We backpacked through Europe. We visited Asia. We visited a lot of countries around the world. And we noticed within every culture and every tradition, there were certain native herbs that were part of the everyday ritual that had so much story inherently in them. And at the time, I was consuming Tulsi tea, also known as holy basil, which is actually an adaptogen. A lot of people don't know it's an adaptogen, a stress-reducing herb, and just so much story around this herb. And we thought, we could do something here. You know, we could really show this. And then we realized that every tea, you know, from matcha tea to oolong from China, matcha from Japan, Earl Grey from England, guayusa from Ecuador, yerba mate from Brazil and Argentina, there was all this story inherently in tea. We just felt like we had to tell that story. And then we went to the tea shelves and we noticed that most brands were on the race to the bottom in terms of price, but also in terms of quality, and really devoid of story. And we wanted to bring story, quality, and good taste to the space.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love that. And I mean, I suppose, you know, I know you said you're going on 6 years. So at the start, what was your general kind of plan with, you know, bringing this to market? Were you looking to get into, you know, more wholesale retail space first? Did you do any like direct to consumer to start it out? What was your kind of general go-to-market strategy at the beginning?
Back then, D2C wasn't as popping. I think COVID really brought that to the forefront.
For sure.
You know, previous to this brand, we had tried launching other brands and we learned a lot. You know, that's how you learn, school of hard knocks.
Yep.
We use really like the natural markets as a barometer, Whole Foods being the main. We felt that if it couldn't get the attention of Whole Foods, there was something wrong. So we really set our goal high in terms of trying to launch into Whole Foods off of the bat. And lo and behold, with our glass line, we're able to crack that. And we launched into one region of Whole Foods in Southern California.
Awesome.
And grew into three regions, grew into some DSD partners and a lot of independents up and down the West Coast and East Coast. So really, retail was our initial focus. And then later on, we got into D2C, Amazon, and other channels.
That's awesome. And do you find finding more growth, obviously, on that side now with the D2C side through your Amazon and your e-commerce website. And if you could just tell me like kind of a breakdown between how you currently exist today. You don't have to go into like specific numbers. I guess like a percentage breakdown, like, you know, how much you're doing in the retail wholesale market versus your D2C here in 2024.
Sure. Wholesale retail is probably around 85% of our business. It's the large chunk. Mm-hmm. Amazon has really taken off. I mean, one of our main issues is that we can't stock it fast enough. D2C also growing. We're just trying to scale our operations on those two channels. But, you know, I think retail is the foundation of business these days. I mean, maybe COVID time, like I was saying, it kind of took a little more precedent, took a little bit more importance. Still important, but retail is where you find those customers, and that's where we're focused.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I mean, from what you can tell, right, like from your D2C data is much more kind of interactive, and you can have that, like, you know, direct kind of almost conversation with your customers. So do you find anything different from like when you started out thinking about like who your ideal customer might be, like what type of person they are? And have you found anything different between like that original idea of who your ideal customer would be or who your like customer avatar would be versus like maybe what it's actually turned into, as you can tell more doing more D2C sales?
We have utilized our D2C to really gather a lot of good data on our customers. And I think that's one of the primary, that's one of the real upsides of D2C is that you're getting all this consumer data, how old they are, what age they are, mm-hmm. what their interests are, et cetera, et cetera. We started off with the glass and, you know, it was really designed for the natural consumer, sort of a sophisticated line. It has these specialty teas from around the world. And I think we captured that. And as we went along, you know, we noticed that glass is really, really great for natural and specialty. You know, it just fits really well. During COVID, post-COVID, we wanted to take this brand and take it out to the mainstream, you know, everyday consumer, the mass consumer, the Publix consumer, the bodega consumer. You know, that's when we decided to, you know, create the cans. And I think we've hit the mark on that one too. The cans really cater to the 25 and under kind of consumer, whereas the glass is really the 25 and older.
I could see that. Yeah, for sure. And I guess I'm curious too. I mean, with seemingly like proprietary blends and recipes you're using to create these teas, have you explored the possibility for like any like private or white labeling? And also, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how you go about the, you know, the manufacturing processes? Do you have a partner? Do you kind of own that process? It's just a big like area of variability I find with CPG brands and that kind of part of the space. So
private label is great. We are looking into it right now. I think investors like it. It's just another great revenue stream, and it's a good way to get some more business and, you know, put some great product out to the market. Primarily, we're not vertically integrated. I think with other types of sectors of like food, if it's like some very specialty product that's very proprietary, you know, I think that's great. You know, it's good to vertically integrate. We outsource to co-mans. We have some really great manufacturers. We have a East Coast co-packer and a West Coast co-packer, and just built really, really great relationships. With that being said, you know, all co-packers are different. So if you're going out there and you're trying to find that partner, just really, you know, do your homework and look at as many co-packers as you can. And it's so important because it's such a basic, very important part of your business. Yeah, we're lucky to have really great partners that we continue to build great relationships with.
Yeah, it's so true. I think it's such good advice for anybody listening. And I always ask this same question, usually towards the end of the podcast, which is just like, you know, if you could go back and like give yourself any like piece of advice, if you were to start over again, what that would be. And so much of the time, the answer I get from like CPG brands is exactly that. Like, you know, as you're looking in like probably having to outsource certain parts of your processes, whether it's your logistics or your manufacturing or whatever the case might be, like take your time to make sure those relationships fit, because it's going to be pretty much like the entire vitality of your scaling efforts is pretty much going to be based on that, like you said. So I think that's really good advice. And it's obviously for the best that you did seemingly take the time to do that on the front end. And that's why you have great, you know, relationships there. So I think it's really important. So I appreciate you mentioning that and highlighting that.
We have learned the hard way, though, I must say. You've been in the game for quite a while, and you know, you're not going to bat 100 with every single thing. There's a lot of guarantees out there. There's a lot of promises, and unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't always deliver, but you got to hire slowly, fire quickly, as they say. And yeah, it's just lucrative. Very important. Mm-hmm.
No, that definitely makes sense. And I suppose as well, I mean, Whole Foods, just from looking at the branding on the website, I mean, that looks like a perfect fit for you guys. So there's no question why, like, you know, that was probably like your first, like, you know, big wholesale effort, why, where you wanted to be. So as you move forward and looking into maybe other change or like even specialty stores, like what kind of characteristics do you look for in a retailer that you feel like aligns with your brand?
Awesome. You know, we really designed, like I said earlier, our glass for natural specialty, our cans for the everyday consumer. And really the lines between conventional and natural are becoming more and more blurred every year. Mm-hmm. Some say that, you know, there's not really going to be that much of a divide in, say, 10 years. You go to Walmart and they're actually one of the, I think they are the largest distributor of organics there mm-hmm. is in terms of volume. So also with the amount of white space that's out there in the market now, you know, considering that Coke discontinued Honest Tea, which was everywhere, and Tazo Glass was discontinued along with seven or eight other brands in space. There's just a ton of white space for us and we're going after it far and wide.
No, that's fantastic. I love that. And so obviously you've taken the time to kind of consider, you know, in places like maybe your Whole Foods or like health specialty stores, you probably go with more of the glass bottles. And that makes sense because that fits. And then you're more just like everyday, like pick up, maybe just like impulse buy from a bodega or a gas station or something. You have the cans or just like ease of use. And maybe like a younger consumer is just like taking stuff on the fly, right? Not necessarily like shopping for their week or something from a Whole Foods. I quite like that perspective. Yeah. And what was the original? The original was just in the glass and then you kind of moved into the cans as you expanded into maybe a more broader market as you got some traction.
Correct. Yeah, we started with our glass. That's our core product. What set the stage for the brand, really playing on the seven seas and the seven continents. That's really what seven teas. It's a play on words, really an ode to the worldliness of tea. And then we continued that narrative into our cans, but more with accessible flavors for your everyday consumer, like Georgia peach, Southern strawberry lemonade, just everyday stuff. And actually, in certain markets, we have both because they don't cannibalize as much as they kind of, it's a collaborative effort. They both lend to a different consumer. So we found that there hasn't been much cannibalization in most markets, and it's more additive to the space having both lines in, say, natural markets. Yeah,
no, I can definitely see that. And I mean, why limit it? Somebody might have a propensity to want to buy aluminum, maybe based off even maybe just some like kind of personal value, believe in the recyclability efforts of aluminum or better than us or something like that. You never know. So no, it's amazing. Yeah. I love that. And I just want to ask you one more thing about kind of like the e-commerce side, which I know you're still obviously continuing to nurture, even though you're doing mostly wholesale, which is pretty common, as I'm sure you know, in the CPG space. But I guess I'm just curious, you know, what kind of like marketing streams do you utilize mostly? And where do you kind of see the most return on your efforts? Do you do any like paid advertising? Do you do more like social media efforts, or what's your like kind of general strategy on that side of things to drive traffic to the website for your e-commerce sales?
Yeah, that's great. We've seen that with Meta ads, they're costly. The space has become so saturated that the ROI on those ads, the ROAS, is not the best in the world. There is a time and place, and we do utilize it when we feel necessary and when the timing and conditions are right. We really leverage Google Ads, PMax. We've seen that has the best ROAS in terms of actually driving new customer acquisition and sales. We also utilize influencers and content creators for top of funnel. We're more getting into that. We want a big stream of content creators putting out that kind of very natural sort of integrating it into their everyday life and building that interest in that way. So those are some of the tactics that we use to drive customer acquisition, and they've been working pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And I guess there's like one question I want to answer just about like the product specifically. So that was on the website, obviously, you know, looking at the labels, super clean ingredients, which is obviously awesome. I mean, that's a big winner for, you know, a lot of people pick up. The first thing they do is look at the label. I mean, this is a no-brainer for anybody looking to, you know, have like clean ingredients, especially organic ingredients. But I'm curious, you know, I've met with a few different like cold packaged drink brands in the past few weeks on the podcast and just in general. And I'm curious where you landed on, you know, with these low sugar options. What had you land on stevia as a sweetener as opposed to maybe, you know, something else, maybe like a sucralose or like any kind of like other maybe alternatives like that?
We always strive for the best ingredients that we can get our hands on. Truly, you know, it really is a passion project. My brother and I are big foodies and health advocates, and we wanted to create a brand that I would feel comfortable giving to my kids. I have two young kids, and I myself wanted to be able to consume it every day without feeling weird about it. And if I couldn't do that, I didn't feel comfortable putting it out to the market. So yes, we strive for low sugar. We want it to taste good. but we didn't want it to just be just stevia. We noticed that that's very polarizing. So we mm-hmm. used stevia, A, because it's natural. You know, some of the sucraloses and some of these artificial sweeteners, you can see the studies. There's a lot of health ramifications to using things like that. That's why we utilize stevia. We don't use it in every SKU. We primarily use it in our lemonades because mm-hmm. lemonades obviously are sour. And without throwing 50, 60 grams of sugar into the formulation, it's just not going to taste great. So we use a little bit of unprocessed organic fair trade cane sugar and a little bit of stevia to make it taste very natural. We found that sugar is more of a, it hits the tongue on certain parts of the tongue, and stevia, it hits other parts of the tongue. But when you combine them in a very balanced way, you can actually get a really nice sweet flavor without all the sugar. Actually, with our lemonades, we're the only brand currently on the market that is a canned organic lemonade, even without the canned format, an organic lemonade that's low sugar and tastes great. Everything else on the market, even in the organic space, 50, 60 grams of sugar, were 18 grams and less.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And it seems to be my experience too. I quite like when things have like a lower sugar, not completely devoid of sugar, so that stevia is the only sweetener. I like the mix, really, I think, fixes the palate well, especially when there's a lot of acidity, like something with lemonade. So that definitely makes sense. I'm just always curious, like, because I've seen people do like agave nectar as a sweetener in their products, and like obviously everything from sucralose to sugar to corn syrup and all those kinds of things. So as far as sweeteners go, obviously, like you said, like everything you mentioned by name is like a can be kind of polarizing. So I'm always curious how, like, you know, people land to make certain decisions, but that's actually been my exact experience. So I'm definitely in agreement with you personally. So that definitely makes sense. And I do want to kind of hear your answer to that question I mentioned earlier. Obviously, going on 6 years now, I know you learned school of hard knocks. You learned a lot of things the hard way along the way, naturally. You know, if you could go back to your day one, even when you were like pre-revenue, and give yourself one piece of advice, like,
that's a very good question. I would, patience comes to mind. And I think networking is very important. Talking to other founders is, you can learn invaluable lessons. Just casual conversations, you never know what's going to come about. And then also ready yourself. I mean, you're in for a wild ride. You know, I think that when people initially get into the space, you think, well, how hard can it be to launch a product, put together a formulation, get some package design, approach a retailer? Maybe it was like that in the 90s and the early 2000s. You kind of approach the guy stocking the shelves at Whole Foods and your hummus, your drink, and get their attention. They can get you up to the higher ups and can work a deal. A lot has changed, you know, the last decade, become a lot more bureaucratic and formalized, and it takes a different approach. And again, a lot of patience. There's reviews. They usually happen twice a year with these retailers, so there's a long waiting periods. I would just say everything I said there, and then I'll put the period on it with, do what you actually care about. Do what is your passion. I've tried doing things in the past where I was chasing fads and it never worked out. Ultimately, if your heart's not in it, you're not going to want to get up every morning, because this is a hard business. It's very, very challenging. There's so many different hats you got to wear. There's so much to it. And if you don't care about what you're doing, you're not going to have the energy to sustain taking it level by level and ultimately where you want to be.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And, you know, from what, as far as I can tell, I mean, just doing the podcast and talking to the brands that I can tell have been successful, have been around, you know, what got through COVID, persevered through that. And, you know, just over like almost a decade long period is impressive in and of itself, even, you know, barring something like COVID happening. That is definitely something that I find. I mean, so many CPG founders I talk to, I mean, they have no background making tea or making whatever they're making. It's just was born out of a passion of, like, you know, my father, I'm recently on a podcast, we haven't posted yet, but somebody shared a story with me that, you know, their father was going through chemo and he loved this certain type of snack and he couldn't have it anymore because it was too salty. So, like, his son literally found a way to make it healthier for him that tasted exactly the same so that he could still enjoy that. And he turned it into a business. And now it's huge. He's into like 10,000 doors across the country. And I think if you don't have that real why behind, like, you know, your brand, it's really hard for, I think, just for yourself to remain like sustainable as a founder and a CEO and wear all those hats. So I think for anybody that's listening who is thinking about getting 2 feet in, into a venture project, you know, if that's not there, maybe pump the brakes. I mean, you should try to find something that's going to be, you know, you can learn a lot doing those things and chasing fads or even just like chasing the money, and you can learn a lot. But for longevity's sake, I think what you're saying is completely on point. I think it's really important for people to understand. So I appreciate you sharing that, Jeremy. And yeah, I just want to give you an opportunity as well to plug your website, your social media pages. You know, anybody listening, they want to, you know, check out the product, see where they can buy it, or maybe for a potential business partnership, any entrepreneurs listening, so people know how to stay in touch with you guys.
You can find us at 7tees.com. That's 7 spelt out, SEVENTEAS.com. You can also find us on all the social channels at 7tees. If you're interested in funding 7tees, we are looking for different funding, whether it's angel, or we're actually going to be starting a crowdfunding program as well as a traditional equity round soon. We'll be closing in the next few months. But $10,000 minimum check size. If you want to reach out to me at jeremy@7tees.com, love to chat. We're also in over 3,000 doors out there. So you can find us at any of your local Whole Foods, Natural Grocers, Fresh Market, Publix. If you're on the West Coast, you'll find us in most places. You can also purchase us on Amazon.
Anywhere in New York State I should know about? I'm about an hour north of New York City. Anywhere come to mind that...
Yeah. Obviously, Whole Foods, Fairways, a lot of independents and on-premise accounts up and down the street, ShopRites. Is Fresh Market up there in New York?
Maybe. It's not something I go to, if it does. I'm not sure. But yeah, ShopRite is my go-to easily. So that'll probably be the best bet for me.
Awesome. Check us out, man. There.
Definitely gonna find a place to try it. And I'm happy to connect again, and happy to share my feedback. Gonna try all of them. The brand, I love what they're doing. And I just want to say, you know, wish you the best of luck and continued success. Just keep doing what you're doing, Jeremy. I think it's great. And forward to staying in touch and connecting down the line as well.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate you, Jeremy.
All right. Take care. See ya.
Thanks, everybody.